The top topics, the headiest headlines, the debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's 11 o'clock, the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Jeff Sambit with Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum. It is Sportsnet Magazine Live with you until noon. Later in the hour, we talk about DeMar DeRozan and his performance with Team USA, what that's going to mean for the Toronto Raptors, and Andrew Wiggins to Minnesota and what that might mean for the future of Andrew Wiggins when he can decide what his future is going to be. We'll talk about that later on in the hour. The Rogers Cup. I got to tell you guys, I'm pretty bummed. No Jeannie Bouchard in Montreal. And now, Dave Zarum, no Milos Raonic here in Toronto. This can't be good. This can't be good for the Rogers Cup.
I mean, you know, a lot of this tournament, especially now with players like Milos, players like Jeannie and Pospisil and others, you do want to see these Canadian stars go far. That's really what's going to kind of generate buzz and get people more into the tournament. But it's not like we haven't been seeing some great tennis. It's not like there's still not great tennis ahead of us. With, you know, you think about the Williams sisters playing today. That's going to be a great match. Mm-hmm. Federer, Roger Federer is one of these guys who I think he's becoming, if he's not already, like one of the most underappreciated true superstars in sports today. I mean, when you think of all time, where this guy ranks among all individual sport athletes, you know, he's right up there. Maybe he's the best of all time.
He's a classy dude.
And he is a classy dude.
Yeah.
And he just had his birthday.
Yeah. What is he, 33 now?
He's 33.
They sing happy birthday to him?
Yeah, apparently they did. I missed that part. I saw the match. I somehow
Jeff,
missed that.
Jeff, were you there?
No, I missed that too.
Oh, you missed that? Do we have that audio? Really?
It's never a sense of panic on Federer's face.
It's a rash Badani.
I mean, there was some panic last year. No, yeah, you're perfect. Listen.
Story checks out.
Oh. That sounds like the number of people that were at Jeff Simmons' last birthday party. But tennis crowds, they're a little different, aren't they?
Yeah, they're a weird bunch. They they're really,
in a good way, right?
Sure, they're really like emotionally attached to the players. Like, I feel like they know a lot about these guys' personal lives, and like everyone who's walking to that stadium who's a tennis fan knew it was Roger's birthday, and that, you know, they were going to sing for him when they got the chance. And I don't know if that's something you see in all sports, but
no, I would think not.
But, you know,
well, I mean, sometimes you see like fans holding up signs or something.
Yeah, fair enough. But in terms of like
so and so, but
yeah, there's this overwhelming majority of diehard tennis fans that come out at tournaments like this, and that's always fun. But you look at the field, I still think there's good tennis left. It sucks that the Canadians have gone, but I also don't think we should be too surprised about that.
Is that overblown, Jeff, where the thought of the two big Canadian superstars are out early or earlier than fans would have liked in the Rogers Cup, both for the men and women?
Whenever you get the chance to see the Williams sisters or Roger Federer, I think that has to be a bigger story than the Canadians. As good as Jeannie has been at times, and I'm obviously a supporter of Milos considering he grew up down the street from where I did. I've always thought I was the biggest star from Thornhill, but...
You are.
Yeah.
You still are, Jeff.
Well, Milos didn't make the semifinals, so...
No, and had he, then maybe we'd be having a different conversation, but you're still the biggest star to come out of Thornhill. Don't let that ever be debated, Jeff.
Andrew Wiggins might have something to say about that.
No, God, no. Who?
Who?
Who? Is he in the studio right now?
He
means nothing
anyway.
To me. He means nothing to me. Of the two of you, Andrew Wiggins and Jeff Simmons, he's the only one that's been dealt.
That's true.
All right? Don't sell yourself short. Raonic, the loss for Raonic yesterday. I get Bouchard as well. But alarm bells, they go off. Dave, when you see early exits for Raonic and Bouchard, but talking about it from a player's perspective?
I don't think so. No, I don't think alarm bells go off at all. In Bouchard's case, you know, she just had a really bad match right from the start. You can tell something was off. It was her first tournament since Wimbledon. With these interim tournaments, too, a lot of times, you know, you will see more of these kind of upsets. It's a good chance for the unseeded players and whatnot to come in and assert themselves, while players like Bouchard and Raonic might be looking ahead to, say, the U.S. Open, and this is kind of a training grounds for them. That being said, you know, they're competitors. They want to win. in Milos's case, you know, you want to see him get past the quarterfinals because he has that kind of ability. The quarterfinals is kind of at this point in his career the very least he can do in a way. But when you look at his game, I really don't think we should be all too shocked that he is beatable, for lack of a better way to put it. You know, there's a lot about his game to like, the serve. He's really worked on some of his ground strokes, his forehand. But there's a lot that I don't like about it that I don't see being corrected, you know, going down the line in his career.
Do you think he's too one-dimensional?
I think he relies far too heavily on his big weapon, which is the serve, and winning his service game. You know, it's interesting. He's won 90% of his service games this year. I think that's second on the tour. I think the top guy is 93. Return games, he's only won 16% of those. So he's real. He's got this strategy he seems to have established for himself to take matches close, to get him into tie-breaking situations, deep into sets, and then find a way to come through. And, you know, that's going to burn him every once in a while. And that's kind of what we saw yesterday, I think. Also, in the case of last night, you look at his opponent, Lopez, and he is a lower ranked player, and on paper, Raonic should beat him. But those two are also, they trained together in Spain. I think they shared the same coach at one point. So they've played each other a lot. And when you got a guy like Milos, who does have these clear ways where he can be beat, you know, you get him on the run, you force him to make shots, and you have a chance against him. And we saw Lopez, he's a guy who was acutely aware of that and took advantage of that. And that's why he lost. You know, we're going to see it happen again. He's not Milos isn't an automatic player yet. He's a really, really, really good player who will continue to be a really good player, but he's just not quite at that level yet.
You know, what was, I think, alarming to some Genie fans, Jeff Simmons, and some Raonic fans, was with Bouchard, we heard the mics pick up when she was speaking to Coach, saying, "I want to leave the court." You heard that. I mean, that's alarming. And then with Raonic yesterday, said that he didn't have the, quote, courage to advance. And in both cases of Genie and Milos, we saw them really get frustrated in front of the crowd. Is that something that has to, as they get older, as they get more experience, those things that they really have to curb? Or is that just, it is what it is. They're frustrated. They're losing.
No, I think it's thing as they get on and they grow more popular and bigger in their sport, they're going to have more pressure. And this is the perfect, being hometowns for both of them, this is a perfect situation for it. With Milos, you saw a ton of unforced errors. He didn't take advantage of any of his breaks. And he's going to have to clean up his game a little. He struggles to break when he plays the bigger opponents in the sport. He struggles to break them. And with Jeannie, she just looked so rusty, and she came out so sloppy, and she hadn't played since Wimbledon. So she was frustrated right from the get-go, and you can see her demeanor was down the entire match.
Yeah.
So I think it is something to worry about going forward, and they're going to have more pressure situations and playing. She said, I think she believed the playing of the hometown got to her a little bit, so she's going to have to adjust to that as her career goes on.
You know, I don't think these two struggle with dealing with pressure. They've both been top players at every level, kind of growing up through the ranks. You look at a guy like Pospisil, who was kind of always in Raonic's shadow, and he's a guy, by the way, who I like his game better than I like Raonic's. I just think it's more well-rounded. I think he has more of a mental edge. But he's a guy who maybe hasn't faced the same kind of continual pressure since a young age. He's kind of come on later in his career.
Well, maybe that's been good for him.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. With Raonic and Bouchard, the pressure thing's been there. They've had time to work on it and continue to work on it. It's nothing new to them. You know, it's funny you mentioned Bouchard's comment to her coach saying, "I just want to leave the court." You know what I would have done in that situation? I would have told her, "Okay, leave the court." Now, I don't know if it's allowed or not, but I would have said, "Okay, leave the court. Walk back to the walk back at least, go to the dressing room, count to 10, turn around, and then come back out in the stadium again." You know, it's that mental refresh.
Didn't Djokovic do that? Or doesn't Djokovic do that? There's someone that I heard recently, I think it was at Wimbledon, where they were so frustrated, they left the court and they came back out. They just had to leave.
And I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often, because, you know, you think of how mental tennis, singles tennis in particular, you're just out there by yourself. You know, you have no one to really talk to. It's all you.
Yeah.
I would imagine it's really valuable to be able to go in, turn around, look at that. You know, just that experience of just walking out, you know, seeing the crowd and everything, just getting that, getting your bearings. It's kind of like hitting the reset button mentally. I think she could have benefited from that. I'm surprised more players don't.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. It's Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Jeff Sammet. Talking about the influence of the success of Raonic and Bouchard as far as Canadian tennis's future. Would you say, Jeff Simmons, that it would be on par with Vince Carter's influence here with the Toronto Raptors and success in basketball? Would you say that that comparable can be made?
I think that's a fair comparison. I don't think it will ever be as big as what Vince was, because how big Vince was throughout North America, especially after that dunk contest. And
what a great time.
Oh, that was a lot of fun.
That was, we've never seen the likes of that in Toronto.
You can just see the growth for tennis just getting bigger. And you can see it in the television ratings, and you can see it online. And people are really starting to talk about tennis all the time. Everywhere I go, people are asking about Milos and about Jeannie. And it's really growing in this country. And people haven't seen that kind of stuff before from Canadian tennis players. And you can really, really see the growth. And that's where you can make the Vince Carter comparison, because all these young basketball players now who are growing up all grew up because of Vince Carter. He was, in the early 2000s, he was the guy. And that could happen with Milos, with a younger generation, and Eugenie.
Yeah, you know, I think it's even, it could even be a bigger influence than Vince had, just because these two are Canadians. They're home, they're homegrown, you know? Imagine if Vince was a Canadian player doing that.
Oh, well. I mean, maybe we'll see that with Wiggins.
Yeah, it's certainly possible 4 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that later, maybe. But if there's time. But with these guys, you know, what I think is interesting is the homegrown factor. What I question is, how long is it going to be before we see that? We're not seeing results from, you know, right now, basically, kids will get into tennis watching Milos and Jeannie more than they would have 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But we're talking about kids like 10 and under. That's kind of the age group you're looking at in terms of developing for the future. So if you get more kids in that wave, we're going to see the benefits from this 5 years, 7 years from now. And I don't think it's something we're going to see immediately within the next couple of years.
Right.
So I think that's just something to watch out for.
It's going to take a few years for that to happen.
But when it does, by all means, we point back to this year.
Now, the tournament, Rogers Cup, women playing in Montreal, the men playing here in Toronto. I hate the fact that the tournaments are played at the same time. Rather, they were split up. Spread this thing out a little bit.
Why?
Well, for me, I just want to be able to focus on the men and then focus on the women, or vice versa. And I think it's just more pub. It's better for the Rogers Cup, generally speaking, because you can obviously, your presence is that much longer. Obviously, you feel otherwise, Dave.
Yeah, I do feel otherwise. I mean, I like the channel surfing aspect of it. You know, I like having to keep track of all these different things going on at once. Tennis is a great sport for jumping in and out of matches. You know, some matches are really compelling and you don't want to leave them for a second. Other matches, though, they go in lulls. You know, you go out of that second set into the third set. You can afford to maybe miss the first couple of games and check back on the one of the women's games that's maybe in a closer, in a tiebreaker, something like that. And so I think when you go to one tournament at a time, you lose that aspect, that March Madness feel to having everything going on at once. It's kind of this manicky first few days, and everything kind of settles out by the weekend. And I think it's a really good groove. I think if you're a real tennis fan, it's just like an overwhelming amount of high quality tennis going on, and I don't see how you can be against that.
Too much of a good thing at one time, Jeff Simmons?
Yeah. Dave makes a very good point.
I do.
And coming into it, I would have gone on the other side.
The Dave Zarum cheering section, courtesy Dave Zarum.
Oh, that wasn't me.
Sorry, Jeff.
That was the intern, right?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
But I think with the tennis, I would like to see the buzz. It goes and comes so quickly. And as Dave said, when it gets to the weekend, it kind of fizzles out. And I think especially with all the Canadians now, it'd be good to have it spread out over a two-week period at different times. And you can really build up some buzz for this tournament. And it'd be great for the fans, and it'd be great so we can see all the matches, because the tennis is so good at this time, and it's a really good tournament, and we should see more of it. So I think missing some of the matches, as much fun as it is to watch on TV, it's not the best for the viewer.
You know, I'm going to throw this out there, Dave. It's more to your feeling.
Okay.
And I get where you're coming from, because if there's a dud match, you go, I'll switch over to the other one.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. But
also, I have a short attention span, so I mean,
that's
perfect for me.
That's exactly where I wanted to go.
Okay.
Because I'm finding, how old are you?
28.
28. All right. So not like you're 20 or anything, but nevertheless, you're in your 20s.
I got a baby face.
I feel that, you do. I feel that that younger people, and I don't mean this in an insulting way, because sometimes you begin a sentence like that and people go, oh.
I'm already a little insulted.
Young people are stupid. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is younger people,
not wrong.
The attention span is different.
How does it compare to older people?
Well, I'm not that much older than you. I got about 10 years on you.
Okay.
But I'll sit there and watch something. I won't flip. I'll sit there and watch it. Mm-hmm. It'll hold my interest. I don't need to go on Twitter. I don't need to see what other people are saying. I don't. The constant what else is going on feeling. I think being older, I can curb that a bit more. I don't feel the sense of I need to see what else is going on. And I think wanting to have the two tournaments at the same time speaks to that about your generation.
It is really interesting. It's definitely a very valid point. I mean, I know just, you know, as you were talking, I'm just thinking of myself watching sports. You know, I have the game on TV. I have like a guitar in my hand, mm-hmm. making notes for story pitches in the future. I'm playing fetch with my dog, whatever, you know, like there's never just one thing
going on
with
constantly me. Multitasking.
Exactly. So the convergence of both tournaments at once really does kind of feed into what I'm looking for in a sports viewing experience. But I do acknowledge for someone who just wants to sit there and get in tune with one game, it does mean ignoring other action that's going on that you could have been watching.
That's a growing trend, right, Jeff? Here in sports fans nowadays, not even just sports.
I don't think.
Yeah, it's probably more than that.
You should never come over for an NFL Sunday if you don't like flipping channels at my house. I'll tell you that.
Well, yeah,
I'm a madman on there. I go NFL, play.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the Red Zone channel?
Oh, it's fantastic.
See, that fits into exactly what you're talking about.
That is fantastic. But for me, part of the football experience is I'm in a football pool. I have to keep an eye on a number of games.
That was my next point. Football is a bit of an exception.
With baseball, you know, the extra innings package and stuff, like, I'll go and find the best pitching matchup, and I'll watch that game. You know, unless I want to watch a Jays game, or I want to watch the Yankees, or whatever. If I'm like, what game do I want to watch? Mm-hmm. I'll check out the pitching matchups, and I'll go, hey, so-and-so's pitching. I'm going to watch that. So I'll go and purposely watch that, and I'll make an assignment to watch that. And, okay, if the game is a dud, maybe I'll bail. But I'll follow that. I'll watch that game. Because, I mean, you can't get into the flow. Like, you talk about the NFL, Jeff, in any given week, in the Red Zone, all that stuff, I feel like my head is spinning after a day of the NFL because there's just so much to consume. I'd rather just sit and watch one game and see what that story is all about.
Yeah, I think, it is more of like an immersive experience almost if you are just staying in tune with one game. You're kind of in on that action a little bit more. You feel like a kinship, for lack of a better word, to that game that you're watching. I guess it just speaks to personality types, you know. It depends on what works for you, and in examples like this Rogers Cup, you know, that works for me better than it might for you. Something like football season, I might flip the script on that, or you might flip the script on that, depending on what you need out of it.
Yeah. Now, getting back to specifically the Rogers Cup and looking towards the end here and talking about the semis and the finals and what we're going to see this weekend, Dave Zarum, your favorites as far as who's going to come away a winner.
Well, I think Federer's track record on hard court is hard to ignore. I think he's got the top win rate right now of anybody on the tour. He's playing some good tennis, finding ways to win. He's making like a few more errors than we're used to seeing him, but I got faith in him. Tsonga is another guy who's playing incredibly well. You know? He's beating a lot of top players and whatnot, and he is a top player himself who just has been away from the court, so he's seen his ranking and seeding fall as a result. So he's seeded 13th, but he's a much far better player than that. But I think those two are who you might see. You know, Dimitrov is going to give Tsonga a big run for his money. He's one of those up and coming guys. Mm-hmm. On the women's side, you know, it's hard to say anything, go against Serena at all. I think she's just playing unreal tennis right now, bouncing back from what happened at Wimbledon. She won her last tournament in, I think, Stanford, and she's just playing. I mean, she's just like possessed right now. Yeah. And when she's in the zone, you know, good luck.
Jeff, the Williams sisters playing each other, has that novelty worn off?
Absolutely not.
No, it still holds your interest, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Me too.
I think it's been a while since it's been a relevant matchup in a way, you know? I mean, now they're meeting in a semifinals of a tournament, and we used to see that maybe more commonly a few years back, and we haven't seen that too much recently. So I think that kind of definitely adds to the intrigue.
So it's not lost on you anymore, Jeff, like that?
No, I'm going to compare it in football to the Mannings, and when you see two sisters in this case, mm-hmm. who are going at each other, and they're both legends of the sport at this point.
Yeah.
That's the best viewing you can almost get.
Yeah.
And as Dave said, they haven't played in a while. So that adds to the anticipation for sure. And
so still plenty to watch in the Rogers Cup. So even though there's no Milos and no Bouchard, nobody's more bummed out about it than I am. There's still plenty to watch.
thank goodness. Now, what does DeMar DeRozan's performance with Team USA mean for his upcoming season with your Toronto Raptors? And does Andrew Wiggins to Minnesota increase his odds of one day becoming a Raptor? One person thinks so. We'll talk about that. Sportsnet Magazine Live continues. I'm Jeff Sammet with Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
It's 11:30, Sportsnet Magazine Live with Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum. I'm Jeff Sambit, the Sportsnet Radio Network. DeMar DeRozan impressing with Team USA. Does that mean he's going to take another leap forward with the Toronto Raptors this coming season? We'll get to that in a moment. Now, guys, let's talk about this Andrew Wiggins to Minnesota deal, if this is actually happening. And obviously, Dave, we've got to wait till August 23rd.
Yeah, it's happening. They just have to wait the period, okay, the 30 days.
So what's this latest news that we're hearing that if Love is with the Cavs or the Cavs have an extension in place for Kevin Love, that the NBA is going to come in and put the kibosh on that deal because that would be tampering?
Yeah.
And what's that all about?
Well, it is tampering if you come to agreement with a player who's on another team for a contract on your team. So I think what we're going to see happen, you know, when it was reported that this trade is actually going to happen, it was accompanied with the tidbit that Love would then opt out of his contract next year and re-sign a five-year, I think, $120 million deal. So if they were to make any of that official in any way or even kind of bring it up right now, I think that would be that would be considered tampering.
So just don't bring it up.
It's going to happen anyways. Just so wait, be quiet, and then you'll have Kevin Love on your team.
Yeah, so there's no fear, right, Jeff, that this isn't going to happen all of a sudden. It sounds like big news, but really all they have to do is, we didn't have a deal in play. We'll announce it like in a week.
Yeah, how do you prove that they had a deal?
Yeah.
But
checking emails or something?
But in terms of like it being a done deal, what I always wondered is, couldn't another team still come in and give him a better offer?
That's what I think. I don't know how anybody... I mean, it could come up with a better offer. Than
well, if you think
Cleveland's
of
offering.
If you think of what Golden State was rumored to be offering, a package including someone like Klay Thompson and other pieces, I mean, something to contemplate at least. I don't know.
Yeah, but Wiggins. Wiggins. Yeah. Maybe we're overpricing him because everybody's first overall pick.
Yeah, if Minnesota won the lottery, how happy would they be now that you're getting a number one overall pick who's considered to be a potential generational player
for
a guy who doesn't even want to stay with your team?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So that's almost the best deal you can get.
Is this a deal, Dave, that's good for both sides, that Minnesota is picking up their future, they would hope, and Kevin Love is in a good place in Cleveland with LeBron?
I think it's pretty great for all sides, and also when you consider the third team that was included, you know, it's not officially a three-team trade, as it's reported, but then also after the Anthony Bennett and Wiggins to Minnesota, Bennett would then go to Philadelphia in exchange for Thaddeus Young to Minnesota. Which is just another kind of good wrinkle. So for the original trade, Minnesota gets rid of a guy who it's pretty clear is not coming back. You know, we saw it in Toronto with Chris Bosh. Toronto fans learned that you would rather get something than nothing, which is what they ended up getting for him when he walked. So you're getting a return for Love, and that return happens to be a guy like Wiggins, who knows, could be a top five player, top 10 player down the line. And someone who could sell jerseys as he has been, someone who can really generate excitement.
Jerseys that you're not going to get a refund for, that you're actually going to buy the jersey and keep it and
exactly.
Use it and wear it, right?
Yeah, who cares what team people are going to buy his
That's
jersey?
Right. Yeah.
So you know, it's good for them. You know, they get a nice building piece. Flipping Bennett to Minnesota, I think, is a great move for them, too, because you bring in Thaddeus Young.
Or to Philly, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, to Philly.
Yeah.
Thad Young is a guy who kind of brings similar skills that Love brought you. You know, he's a power forward who can stretch the floor, shoot that three a little bit. He's nowhere near the rebounder, but he is maybe a better man defender. So he's kind of a poor man's replacement in a way. Mm. And then Wiggins and picks. So I think that's good for them. For the Cavs, I mean, come on. Kevin Love, he's a top forward in the game. He's an elite player. You don't turn down the opportunity to bring him in when you have an unproven prospect on your team.
Well, I'll tell you, Jeff Simmons, that we see a slimmer LeBron James. Not that, you know, he was the guy that ate LeBron James like a month ago, but we see a slimmer guy
that perhaps is getting ready for his future, but also could speak to the style of play that he might have this year in not having to absorb as much contact and having Kevin Love on the floor to do that for him.
And this trade speaks perfectly to that.
Yeah.
With Love now to play down the middle, and he can be, he's one of the better low post offensive players in the league. And mm-hmm. now you take him, put him in there where before you had Wiggins and with Tristan Thompson, he would have been the starting and power forward.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a massive upgrade. Now LeBron could play more on the wing and create from there. And with him and Love, that's a dangerous duo.
Dave Zierum, is he preparing for his future in this way? Maybe changing his style of game, getting a little healthier and a little more fitness. Maybe seeing Kobe Bryant and his struggles with injury late into his career and trying to avoid that?
I think possibly. I think in the offseason, players are always, that's kind of their time to experiment with this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you might just be seeing a guy who's trying something different and seeing how that affects his training throughout the summer. Maybe he puts the weight back on once the season comes around. But from afar, it is a lot more fun to look at it and say, he's slimming down so he can have a post player do what he was doing in Miami, and he can be that kind of running, more of a point guard kind of player we saw when he was in Cleveland originally.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's definitely a correlation there.
Michael Grange had a good piece on Sportsnet.ca, as he is wont to do. But Michael Grange was also on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, yesterday, and he was talking about this article. And he was the point of it was Wiggins going to Minnesota. All right, we talk about what Minnesota's getting, what Cleveland's getting in the deal. Okay. But he's looking at it from a Toronto standpoint and from a Raptors standpoint. And he's looking at it and saying that down the road, when he can decide, he being Wiggins, can decide what his future is going to be, that eventually he'll just want to come on home and choose to be with the Toronto Raptors as opposed to staying in Minnesota. I think that's a very, very difficult thing to forecast right now. Don't you think, Jeff? I mean, and Michael's welcome to his opinion, and he could predict as much as we can, and we could certainly do that as well. But I think it's awfully tough to do so, and I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Andrew Wiggins is going to choose Toronto over Minnesota when he can make that choice in 2017.
Well, I understand where Michael's coming from. I think there are so many factors at play there that, like, I understand that as a Raptor fan, that's your first thought. Rather than Cleveland, where he can play with LeBron, he's going to a place that hasn't had a history of retaining players. We see Love get out of there. But there's so many pieces at play here. Say, for one, Wiggins has never played an NBA game. We don't know how good this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first factor. Second, he could go to Minnesota and absolutely love it. Maybe he's away from all the pressure of playing at his hometown. He's away from his family, and he could be a star in Minnesota and turn the team around if he's as good as they say he is. So, one, there's another factor there. But I understand where the idea of coming home is becoming this new trend with LeBron, and Durant mentioned it with Washington. His contract comes up soon. But I think we should let at least Wiggins play out a couple of years before making this kind of assumption. Because who knows if he even wants to play for the Raptors?
Yeah, or a prediction. Maybe who knows what the landscape's going to look like, or what the Toronto Raptors are going to look like at that time, and what the T-Wolves are going to look like at that time.
But, you know, it is something that obviously the fans are talking about, are really kind of, they have that 4 years from now pinpointed on the calendar when it could be a possibility. And, you know, I think Grange's piece was one of the most read columns on Sportsnet.ca ever. Mm. So that kind of speaks to how much Raptors fans are tuned into the Wiggins situation and this potential that's out there. You know, it's something people will be watching, whether it's pie in the sky thinking or not.
Well, and it's also whether or not at that time Minnesota is going to be able to attract pieces to join Wiggins there. Like if Wiggins doesn't feel that players want to come there, he's not going to want to stay there.
I'll say this. I mean, trading Bennett might hurt the cause a little bit, but they're lined up to be one of the most exciting teams to watch from a pure like highlight standpoint mm-hmm. next season. So who knows? They might be developing something pretty fun there. You think about the rookie Zach LaVine, who might be better than a lot of people thought he was going to be around the draft, and who's showed all summer that he's might already be the best dunker in the NBA. You know, he's just a ridiculous athlete. Put him alongside Wiggins, and then give them a point guard like Ricky Rubio. Mm-hmm. Sorry. And that's going to be a fun team to watch. So who knows? They might build like a cult following that way, and they might develop something in Minnesota. But you're right. They're far ways away from being a competitive team. Mm. And that's going to have to be a big factor in terms of whether anybody stays on a team, right?
That's Dave Zarum, Jeff Simmons as well. I'm Jeff Sammet. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. We're with you until the top of the hour. Jeff Simmons, do you think that the Toronto Raptors are gearing for the possibility that Andrew Wiggins decides he wants to come back to Toronto?
I think that's a huge long shot. And I think if you're building a team that way, you're setting yourself up for failure. The one thing I like about Masai Ujiri is he really seems to have a good plan, and he didn't get into the free agent nonsense this year where Lowry was, he didn't get into where he's relying on free agency. Say like a team like the Lakers who struck out on everything and were left with nothing. The Raptors have really built a sustainable team up. They're doing it with internal development, with Valanciunas. And obviously if the Wiggins things lines up, great. But there's so many fat. You can't build a team like that. That is setting yourself up for failure, because if you swing and miss on that, you're left with nothing.
Look,
that's not how Ujiri operates.
Sort of. The Raptors are building to win right now. I mean, they saw what happened last year with their team. What Ujiri did was he brought back the same pieces. You know, he quietly had a very effective offseason in that way. And they're going to be, I think they're right there in the running for a home court again in the playoffs. I think they're in a good position to challenge for third, maybe even second in the Eastern Conference. I think this is a good basketball team. And they're not looking too far down the line in terms of, you know, winning in the future. I think they see there is a window to win right now. Who knows how long it's going to take for this Cavs team to come together, which we saw at the beginning of Miami. Mm-hmm. Chicago's looks like they're, in my money, Chicago's the best team in the East.
They're the team to beat?
I think Chicago's the team to beat. You think they're replacing DJ Augustine with a healthy Derrick Rose. They're replacing the corpse of...
Assuming during that sentence he didn't get hurt.
Yeah.
And that could happen, right?
And he may have, and let's hope he doesn't, because there's no player in sports I want to see win a championship more than Derrick Rose. And they're replacing the corpse of Carlos Boozer with Pau Gasol. So that's a good team. Without Rose,
the corpse?
Yeah, I mean, have you seen Carlos Boozer play recently? So they're taking a 50-win team without Rose, and just they've gotten so much better. I think that's the team to beat. But the Raptors are in that conversation, so I don't think they're looking so far down the road. Now is the time.
Mm. Well, it's going to be interesting. The Bulls, I mean, they got a front court like no other. I mean, it's a fantastic front
court. Taj Gibson off the bench.
Yeah, they're deep, but...
Comes down to the point guard.
So where are the Raptors then? Like in the Eastern Conference, guys, do you think that they're kind of like there's the upper echelon, with all due respect to the Raptors, then they're kind of that maybe best of the middle of the pack?
Yeah.
Eastern Conference, 4-5 type of thing?
I think they got to be third.
Third, huh?
Paul George broke his leg last weekend, so that really hurts Indiana. And outside of Chicago and Cleveland, I think the Raptors, who are bringing back everyone, DeRozan, they got Lowry and Valanciunas could take another step forward. They're deep. They have a really good bench. I think they're the third team. And I think they're the best team in their division. That'll get them atop a home court seed. And then I don't see who's the favorite to jump them.
A couple of teams you have to watch out for that. Washington's going to be better this year.
Yeah.
And they were pretty good last year. They added Paul Pierce. You know, that was kind of a quiet move to get a Hall of Famer like
corpse
that.
Corpse of Paul Pierce.
He's still effective.
He's a corpse like Boozer.
Yeah, he's no Boozer. and then also the Bobcats, I think they got better this year as well.
The Bobcats?
Yeah, they got better this year.
They got better.
Yeah, they're not going to...
Can Michael Jordan play for them?
They're not going to win the conference. I'm sure if he wanted to, he could.
Yeah, I'm sure he wanted to do that.
Yeah, he can do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah, that's right.
But so there are teams out there that are going to challenge.
But would you say that the Raptors would be third in Eastern Conference?
I think that's where it looks right now. It's like it was last year. It's a two-team conference with Chicago and now Cleveland.
Yeah,
Miami takes a step back. And Toronto's that kind of right where they were last year, third.
How big a step back do you think the Miami Heat takes?
No, I don't think it's going to be as big as people think.
I don't think so either.
Dwayne Wade's still an effective player. He's nowhere near the guy who we're used to seeing. Oof. But if he can stay on the court, take that for what it is. They're okay. And Bosch, too, is still a good player.
Now he's got to take on a bigger role.
Which will be really interesting because he made a comment, something along the lines of, like, you won't see CB4 again, you know, referring to, like, his persona from when he was in Toronto, which I took to mean a go-to guy, like an A1 superstar. So if he does, it's all mental with him, I think, at this point. If he doesn't think he can be that guy again, he won't be.
I don't know. He might be doing the bowling thing. You know when you guys go bowling and... You're like, oh, I'm terrible at this. I'm terrible at this.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're still trying really hard. And then when you're really good for like the first couple of frames, you're like, yeah, it's no big deal. You lower the expectations. So when you think you're going to be bad, it's not a surprise.
The question for him is whether he's been ruined by the last few years in Miami, taking that tertiary role, becoming like an outside shooter, He said before he's not comfortable banging in the low post like he used to be. So if his game has really changed that much, and you wonder how much the mental effects of not being the guy has had on him. It's really hard for me to kind of see how that's going to.
But don't you think that if he felt that way, that he would have just jumped ship and went to Houston? Or does maybe money talks, right?
From what I understand, he really liked living in Miami. And
I don't blame him.
And I don't think it was the easiest thing for him to leave Toronto. I mean, he wanted to win, so from that perspective, it wasn't going to be happening here. But he does seem like the kind of guy who gets attached to a situation and isn't willing to. Know. What?
But he couldn't find the NBA package, right?
Yeah, that's right. I don't think he loved Toronto. I mean, I think he loved his time there, but I don't think he loved it enough. Clearly, he didn't because he didn't stay. But I don't think he was like, I don't want to leave Toronto, but I have to. I don't think he felt that way. I really don't. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live with Dave Zirum, Jeff Simmons. I'm Jeff Sam, Sportsnet Radio Network. Kevin Durant, we're going to get to him in a moment, assuming we've got time. But briefly, DeMar DeRozan impressing with Team USA. Does he take another leap forward, Dave, with the Toronto Raptors? The success he's having with Team USA, and he certainly is impressing. I don't know if it's to a point where he makes the club in the next stage of cuts. But he certainly is impressing, and he's making it difficult on those that make decisions with Team USA. But the success he's having there, do you expect bigger things out of DeMar for the Toronto Raptors this year?
Yeah, I do. He's a guy who continues to improve. I think you will see him continue to do that. As far as the chances for USA go, just real quick, I think they got a lot stronger when Paul George broke his leg and when Durant had to step aside. You know, now there's that much more of a need for that scoring wing, which is what he provides. But yeah, I think you see, in that USA level, I think DeMar is a guy who, DeRozan's a player who's kind of appreciated more elsewhere, perhaps, as much as he is, the fans do like him here. You know, they love him in that America camp situation, and they've brought him on the select team for years because he really excels in that kind of practice environment. He's got this work ethic, and that kind of rubs off on people like Jim Boeheim and Coach K and the people in charge of Team USA basketball. So you take what he's doing this summer, playing alongside these superstars, working on his game, he translated it to what he's going to bring next year. And I think we are going to see a player who's even better than what we saw last year. And last year he was pretty great. I mean, he was like a top 10 scorer. He's a really, for the first time, seemed like a guy who you can give the ball to and expect results. And I think as he takes on more responsibility, he's going to be a guy who continues to establish himself, especially from a leadership standpoint.
Your expectations, Jeff, higher for DeMar this year?
Absolutely. He's had a really healthy progression in his career. When he came out of USC, he was a pretty raw player with a ton of athleticism and a ton of upside. He's really developed his jump shot. He's really developed his drives to the basket. And he's just gone much smarter as a player. And the playoff experience was a great thing for him. He needed that in his career. And I think as he gets more opportunity and more comfortable with Lowry and the guys he's playing around, he's going to take that next step. That's just the way his career's gone. He's gone better progressively every year. And as he's gotten older and more mature, his game has really, really developed. And playing in the USA is only going to help him because he's playing with the best players in the world. And he should take that next step for a team that is going to need DeRozan to be a superstar to contend in the top three, as we mentioned.
And nice to have that solid foundation here with the Raptors organization in Toronto. I mentioned Kevin Durant, rumored to have been offered a 10-year, $325 million deal from Under Armour, which, of course, Kevin Durant is from the same area that Under Armour has its headquarters in Maryland. Is there anything to that, Dave Zirum, as far as Durant's future and when he could decide what it is?
It's a fun conspiracy theory, and if this Under Armour deal happens, which is supposed to be maybe even closer than people think, it does set up that stage. You know, is he going to come home like LeBron came home? Is he going to come home like we're talking about Wiggins coming home?
That's like the new thing, huh? I'm coming home.
Yeah, it's the new thing. It's like Pogs.
Remember Alf?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, who knows if that ever played? I think it's a more fun conspiracy theory than it is an actual talking point. But I do think that deal is going to be really big for a lot of reasons. Kind of might help change some of the landscape in that world.
So, Jeff Simmons, Durant's the highest paid endorser in the NBA, global superstardom. Still, it's LeBron, right? You can't compete with LeBron.
Oh, yeah, he's still, as good as Durant is and as much as his contract is going to be worth, LeBron is still the biggest superstar, the most marketable player, and the most well-known player in the world of basketball. And it adds up. He's the best player in the world, and he's the biggest superstar and most marketable guy. So
here's my question about that. So LeBron's is kind of maybe the biggest athlete in the world. You consider basketball's popularity globally. This Durant deal sets him up to be financially in the same conversation. But who's the guy who's going to... What athlete today can surpass LeBron in that standpoint? Or is a guy like Messi more popular already? Mm. Is it... I think... Would it have to be from soccer or basketball? I mean, what athlete is going to surpass LeBron James as the biggest athlete in the world?
I think it still is basketball and soccer. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe tennis if you're massive, like a Federer. But even still, mm-hmm. I think it would have to be because of the global attention.
In terms of global attention, those two sports just dominate. Right. Cristiano Ronaldo was just in North America. One of my coworkers from the office covered the game at the Big House and said, girls were screaming at the top of their lungs when he walked out of the bus, and he's the only one I could see. In terms of other sports, I don't think there's a great comparison, but there's one guy who could make a kind of ascent like this, Richard Sherman, who was named by Time Magazine as the most influential, one of the top 100 influential people in the world. Hmm.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and it's not just because of the rant he made. He's a really, really smart, marketable, savvy guy.
He writes for SI, doesn't he?
Writes for SI. Yeah. He's the... One of the only person to come from Stanford, who went from Compton to Stanford, and he knows how to market himself. The Seattle Seahawks were not a very prominent team before he got there.
But, I mean, go overseas and how many people know who Richard Sherman is?
Well, that's my point. I said he's the only one capable.
In North America, maybe.
I said, there's no one. Football players, just American football isn't big in Europe. And
like maybe it's Neymar. I think Durant's the closest guy in the NBA, but he's not going to touch LeBron from that standpoint.
Well, and Sherman speaks to the point. You win a championship, and all of a sudden, your odds of getting that much greater are certainly going to increase. Guys, it's been a great couple of hours. It's been Sportsnet Magazine Live. Next edition of the show next Saturday at 10 a.m. Thanks, Jeff Simmons. Dave Zarum for joining us in studio. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, that was great. Thanks.
I'm Jeff Sammet with you until 12:30 with a brief edition of Sportsnet Today. Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet.ca and Sportsnet Magazine will join me to start to get you set for Game 2 of the Tigers-Blue Jays. We'll give you reasons the Blue Jays tie up the series, perhaps, for a heartbreaking loss last night. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network.